Hello there. You're listening to The Box Office Show. I'm Ryan Hill.
And I'm Dylan Johnson. Today we're going to be talking about the box office numbers from last weekend and our box office predictions for this upcoming weekend.
We will also be reviewing Netflix's live-action adaptation of the masterful cartoon series Avatar: The Last Airbender. Okay, we'll start off with some news. We got a lot to catch up on here. Some sad news to start off. The Batman has been pushed back to 2026. Dylan, your thoughts?
There must have been something in the way. Good?
What?
No?
Like what?
No, not a good bit? You didn't like the joke?
Oh, yeah.
There we go. Didn't work?
It was had to connect the dots there for a second.
Come on, that was good.
Here's what I'm wondering. If Batman Part 2 comes out in 2026, again, that's like smack dab when they're trying to bring out the new DCU. And then, ideally, you'd want to have a trilogy, but then that could only be 2029 at the earliest, right?
Dude, we're gonna be so fucking old. That's when we would have
the other Batman. Yeah, don't even get me started. So I'm worried now about the prospects of getting a trilogy at all. And then at that point, it's like, are they even going to continue with the Batman Part 2? So it's been delayed. It's still in the works, but there's still time before it actually gets filming for them to cut the cord on it. So hopefully we'll be able to see Matt Reeves, Pattinson, get back into it. But for now,
we're going to see Colin Farrell pretty soon, though. Penguin Show.
That is true. The Penguin is coming out. We'll talk about that later on. But yeah.
After that, we have a Teen Titans adaptation in the works at DC. Thoughts about that, Ryan? After they're already Teen Titans live action. Is this going to be live action or is it going to be an animated?
It's live action, but it's a movie. So that's the difference. We've had like the Titans shows and whatnot. But
now are they recasting or are they using the live action cast?
They are going to be recasting for sure. And if they need help with their recasting, James Gunn, just go listen to the DCEU episode that we did.
Oh, yeah.
Our Cinema Showdown. I had a few casting choices in there.
Yeah, you did.
So go ahead and scalp those. And
I forgot we did that. God, that was a long fucking episode, man.
It was a heavy-duty episode. But there's some good ideas in there. So honestly, James Gunn should go back through and listen. And especially with, again, the castings that I was throwing out there. I thought some of them were pretty good. So we'll see. Those will obviously be very big roles for whoever does end up getting them. But yeah, again, DCU, they're still, before they've even started, they're still announcing new projects and getting things in the works. So we'll see how that pans out. But switching over to another big franchise, Star Wars Acolyte. The trailer for the newest Disney Plus Star Wars show has arrived. Dylan, I suspect you haven't seen it.
That's correct. I have not. I didn't give a fuck. Did you see it?
I did.
Was it good?
I watched it because this is the one that's based around the Siths. And it's not like current. It's not any of the timelines we've been seeing in the movies or the shows. This one goes way back past, or way before, rather, the prequels. So that part was intriguing to me. However, it's obviously no Andor. So,
that's a bummer.
If you're holding out for another level of quality from that, from Disney Plus show, I think we'll be waiting until Andor season 2.
Bro, we're never going to get another Andor. That shit was so good. Insane.
Yeah, it was phenomenal. But I'll see what the buzz is, what the word is on it. I have watched all the Disney Plus things, even the Boba Fett one, because I don't know, just wanted to catch up or complete it. That one was truly bad. So there's low bars. So as long as they can clear that, it should be fine. And it does have an interesting premise. Mm-hmm. And it will, you know, be somewhat detached from like throwing in nostalgia stuff. So it can just work on creating new characters. So again, wasn't heavily sold from the trailer, but I'll check it out.
We'll see. Yeah. And speaking of Star Wars, Rogue Squadron is back, baby. It's back with Patty Jenkins at the helm once again. It's possible they won't cancel it this time.
But it is possible that they could, which would then be hilarious. Obviously, the running gag is all the announced Star Wars movies that get canned. And so Patty Jenkins already went through that. She's already gotten her award for being a director attached to a Star Wars project that has never come to fruition.
Patty Jenkins, Taika Waititi, Benioff and Weiss for a trilogy. Mm-hmm. It's rough, man.
There's like too many to count. Like, again, Guillermo del Toro was in the talks at one point. That one never got like officially announced, but that just shows like truly any director that has like a good, successful blockbuster, they'll go ahead and like pitch something to them and be like, please come make a film. So Rogue Squadron could be coming back. We will see. Not entirely confident about this one. I'll wait until it's actually in the middle of production to really believe it.
Yeah.
And then finally, House of the Dragon season 2 trailers have dropped. And they did a fun marketing thing here where they dropped a black trailer and a green trailer for the colors of each of the houses in the major war that's going on. Again, you never ended up watching season 1, and I think you should when season 2 rolls around. You watched half of it? Okay. You need to finish watching it. Because I really do enjoy it. And the aspect that I love, which you're leaning into here, is just choosing a side, basically. Like, which team are you on? Even though, again, there's like awful people on both sides, which I'm also glad that they've like brought that back from the earlier seasons of Game of Thrones, is everyone has their flaws. Everyone does some terrible things, but you still detach from them. You know, you're watching a fantasy show, so you just root for whichever one you want to overcome all these other obstacles. So yeah, I'm a fan of it. I'm looking forward to that. They do, at least through season 1, like they very clearly, there's an obvious side that they have like centered as a main character. So I'm hoping they spread it a little more evenly. But yeah, I'm very intrigued. I'm definitely going to be tuning in to season 2.
Indeed. Now let's do our box office breakdown for March 15th to the 17th. Coming into first place, Kung Fu Panda 4 with $30 million in its second weekend. Yes?
Yeah. It was able to eat past Dune Part 2 in its third weekend with $28 million. So still great performances there from Dune Part 2. Definitely the biggest film so far of 2024.
Following that was Mark Wahlberg's Arthur the King in its debut with $7.6 million, a little more than I thought it would. I think I said, what, 4?
Yeah. You did not believe in it highly, but Marky Mark and the dog, they came through.
No, they didn't. 7.6 is not a lot.
It came over at least the low bar that you set. I suppose. But true, it is not a lot. And again, like dog movies, remember Channing Tatum's dog?
Mm-hmm.
That hit double digits.
Yeah. People usually will go see a dog movie, you know?
Mm-hmm. Imaginary with $5.5 million.
Cabrini with $2.8 million.
Love Lies Bleeding going wide and getting $2.4 million.
Bob Marley One Love, $2.2 million.
One Life, $1.7 million.
The American Society of Magical Negroes, $1.3
million. And rounding out the top 10, falling below $1 million, Ordinary Angels. All right, then let's go into the box office predictions for March 22nd to 24th. Ghostbusters, The Frozen Empire. So yet another blockbuster releasing. Again, we're in that time of March where back to back to back, we're getting these blockbusters. Now, Afterlife in 2021, which was one of the films on your roster.
Mm-hmm.
Notably, you didn't go for Frozen Empire this time. It made $44 million in its opening, Afterlife. So what do you think Frozen Empire is going to get in its opening?
I think it would do similar numbers, if not like slightly lower. I think people still are interested in Ghostbusters.
Yeah, I think it'll do similar numbers. It'd be bad, though, that it's getting similar numbers since it was a 2021. It's actually an interesting case because, like, Dune was 2021. Godzilla vs. Kong was 2021. So we can see, like, the direct comparisons between those films that came out still in that pandemic era and a lot of them day and date. And then the ones that are, you know, releasing now and whether or not the sequels are going to do way better. Of course, Dune did do way better. Frozen Empire, you would assume as well, not having the handicap of COVID, should be able to outperform it. But yeah, I don't know. I'm thinking it'll also be around the same level as Afterlife.
Yeah. Now we can move on to our main topic of discussion, which is the new live action Avatar adaptation on Netflix. Now, if you are fans of the show, you will know that we are big fans of Avatar in that we did a very in-depth analysis of the entire original Avatar series.
Episode by episode.
It is in completion when listened to from start to finish, close to, if not past, 10 hours long. It is insanely, insanely long that we did that.
Indeed.
But we did do it.
We did, yeah. That was also, that was a 2021 thing. So, yeah, go back and listen to that if you just want the deepest dive possible on Avatar and the brilliance, particularly of its writing. But yeah, we were just praising every aspect of that show because it is fantastic. Again, it is probably my favorite animated show. It's in my top 10, my top five, actually, of all shows for you. I know it's in your like top five of animated shows. Mm-hmm. So it's definitely Bojack, beloved.
Bro. Can't be Bojack.
Yeah, Bojack's your number one, but for sure, Avatar's in that conversation. So it's just phenomenal. Beloved by us, of course. We wouldn't do that whole extensive series on it, breaking it down in such detail if we didn't love it. So this one had a lot to live up to. I don't think any of us were under the impression that it would, though. So, you know, we came in with not the highest expectations, not even really trying to judge it to the original series. But we'll definitely talk about the comparisons there, some of the changes they make, some that are necessary for the live action medium, but then some that they're doing just because they want to distinguish it, I guess, and make it its own, which, by the way, power to them. I mean, you wouldn't want a shot-by-shot remake of an animated show, but just in live action, that'd be boring and it would just be pointless. So they definitely should incorporate changes. They should try and make it their own. Mm-hmm. But that does mean we still get to come in and gauge whether or not we connected with those changes. Mm-hmm. So spoilers for season one of both shows, I guess. We're going to be doing an incredible, not as incredible as, you know, the series we did in 2021, but we'll be doing a deep dive here of just the things that we didn't like, things we did like, overall thoughts on the show. Dylan, you have a confession to make about how much of season one?
I didn't watch the last episode. I watched everything except the last episode. I couldn't quite finish it in time, so whatever. You're just going to have to fill me in as if I don't know what is going to happen. I've seen the original animated series hundreds of times, and I own it on Blu-ray DVD. So
it's true, but there's a few notable changes in there final episode.
It'll be a surprise when you tell me then.
Yeah, it will be. But I wish you could have seen, again, the Momo death fake out.
No shot. They do a Momo death fake out?
Yes, that's what I'm saying. Like, that's it truly, so funny. You need to see it to believe it. It was absurd. So we'll get to that when we get to that. But mm-hmm. Yeah, overall impressions on the show. So you've seen, so it was eight episodes. So mm-hmm. you've seen seven. What are your general impressions of Netflix Avatar The Last Airbender, so, or NATLA, as some might say?
Yeah, when they announced it, I was a little, what's it called? I was apprehensive, yeah, a little bit apprehensive, because we've all seen what happened with M. Night Shyamalan's Avatar, you know? We all know what happened there. And so I feel like doing a live action adaptation of Avatar is going to be challenging no matter what you do. It's going to, because you have to get over the hurdle of so much CGI in trying to tell the story in a way that feels like it's not just fully animated. And you have to get over a lot of hurdles in terms of animating those bending powers and making it look good. And you have to get a lot of hurdles of the fact that there is so much story in each season of the show that you're condensing into a much shorter version of that show because you only have so much budget to do it in. So mm-hmm. there's a lot that it has to get over. And then I found out that the original creators were attached to the project. You know, the original creators of the animated show. We're gonna be Dante DeMartino and Brian. Starts with a K. It's hard to pronounce.
Yeah, it is a little lengthy name. I'll look it up.
Look it up for you. Yeah,
they go by. They have like sort of Benioff and Weiss. They're known as D&D. These guys are jointly known as Break. So
okay,
you just refer to them as that going forward, I guess.
They were attached, and so I was like, okay, this seems like it could be a good thing. They will figure out a way to tell all the story they wanted to tell in a shorter amount of time, and then the filmmakers will figure out a way to turn those stories into live action form. This has a potential to work. And then they drop the first few images. There's the one of Aang and Appa in the South Pole that looks really good. That was the first image they dropped. I was like, okay, this looks like it could be something good. This looks like it could be something real. And then a few weeks ago, it drops. And I saw that you had been watching it, and I forgot that it was dropping. And I went, oh, it's time to watch the new Avatar show. This is going to be awesome. And I put it on, and dude, that first episode was rough. Oh my God.
I'll tell you the exact moment that I was like, ooh, yeah, it ain't living up. For the record, it's Bryce Konietzko, I believe is how you say it.
Konietzko.
So, yeah, that was the other creator. And yeah, they had left. Interestingly enough, they were at the premiere of it. Really? So it wasn't like true bad blood where they were like going to disown the show entirely, but they did leave a few years back.
Yeah, that's rough. But yeah, that was a rough thing, is them leaving.
For sure. Side. Yeah, because One Piece, for instance, had a lot of the creators' input on that. And so, you know, had that blessing. And it turned out, apparently, I've heard only good things from people that have been seeing that adaptation. Mm-hmm. So not a great sign when the creators have left the project. But yeah, ultimately, I guess they were fine enough with it to still associate at the premiere. But yeah, the first episode, the moment that I knew that we were in for it was Aang
flying
yep. down
from the that was thing. The exact moment I went, oh, this isn't gonna be good, because everything building up to it is like, you're just seeing the airbending temples, it looks pretty good, they're doing teaching, everything looks like it's going well, you see the fight sequence in the beginning with the bending, the earthbender versus the firebenders, and then he meets Ozai, and
Ozai burns them.
Yeah, and you're like, okay, this could be something good. This could be something good. And then you get to Aang flying, and I'm like, oh, this is going to be a rough one. Why? Why do they do that?
I don't know.
Why
on
do they
two
make
fronts,
him physically be able to fly?
Number one, it's like, just give him the glider so he can like glide down. Because again, it looks like he's just flying there.
Because later in the show, he glides in Omashu, and it looks good. Like, it looks fine.
Yeah.
It works.
So I don't know why they didn't have him glide. And then, yeah, that was when the volume or the green screen, whatever they were using, I mean, it just looked fake and cheap. And so I'm like, oof, we're definitely going to be getting moments like that. That'll take us out. So that was not the greatest. And again, my overall impression is like, it's not good.
Yeah.
Like, even if we hadn't seen the original to compare, I think it would still be a letdown. In the main thing, there's a lot of things, but yeah, I think the main thing is the writing, especially in the dialogue and the exposition.
Dude, the dialogue is so bad.
Truly awful. Like, again, that's the thing. We're comparing it to a cartoon that was obviously intended for kids. This one, like, part of the point, I think, of them making the live action is, okay, we're going to broaden it. Because there are a lot of people, and not even just old people. Again, I was talking with a few people like about the show and whether or not they'd seen it. And they're like, yeah, I just don't watch cartoons or animated stuff. So there are people out there that would never get to experience the joy of Avatar because they don't watch animated stuff. So it's like, okay, we can bring it into live action, try and capture that same spirit, allow people to like relive it in a new way if they are fans, and then bring in new fans. But I feel like the people that weren't fans would also not be interested in continuing with this if they didn't have like some level of nostalgia for the original or anything like that. Because, yeah, a lot of it is just so dumbed down.
Yeah.
Again, compared to, like, the kids show, which was able to, and we went through it, that whole thing. We're talking about, like, the brilliant writing choices, the brilliant characterizations, how they were able to treat its, like, main audience with a level of respect so that they'd be able to understand everything, get invested in it. But then also older people, adults, when you get back watching the show, or if you come to it for the first time, I mean, back when it dropped on Netflix, the animated show, for the first time in the pandemic, tons of people that had never seen it before, that didn't have nostalgia for it, were falling in love with it. Mm-hmm. That's because at any age, you could watch that show, get invested by it. This one is like more for kids because they just dumb everything down. They explain every single thing to you out loud multiple times. Yeah, the whole show don't tell rule was I mean, they reversed it and pinned that on the whiteboard in the writing room or in the writing room or something, because it was just frying my brain every time they would just have a character explain every little emotion they had or thought they had or piece of exposition. It's like, come on, I just don't get it.
Yeah, I just, not only that, I feel bad for the actors. There's only so much they can do with terrible dialogue. And then on top of that, the filmmaking principles themselves that are being used here, it just feels like amateur work. Like, this is a $300 million television project, and it just feels so weakly created. Like, there's no coverage in anything. There's no cutting in anything. There's no inserts. It's like I'm watching, it's like I'm watching a stage play version of Avatar, and someone's just filming it on like a really nice camera from one angle the entire time. I'm like, what is happening? You have no, the only time that the filmmaking ever gets like decent or good is when it's an action sequence, which is fine. Like, I'm glad you put in effort in the action sequences, but where did the rest of your attention span go? Did you not care about the dialogue scenes at all? Because it's mostly dialogue scenes. That's all it is. You've turned the show into almost entirely dialogue scenes, and you don't give a shit about like coverage, like basic dialogue coverage at all. You do a shot reverse shot, and it's not even good. You have no inserts on any important information, so it makes it very, very challenging to follow along until the characters just say exactly what it is you're supposed to know, which you could have done with an insert shot.
Yeah. Again, that goes back to they just don't show. They ignore that, and they just want to tell you and spell it out constantly for you. And there's a few, we'll get to them, but there's a few specific moments where it's like, just use the power of a cut to something, and that'll allow us to connect the dots. It's like the most basic thing, like the Hitchcock's experiment and whatnot, of just two images put next together and you can create association from it. Yeah. Just do that at any point, please, instead of having someone spell it out. Or if you know this too, they use way more like voiceover monologues in this.
Mm-hmm.
Like they did that multiple times to end an episode. And I'm like, I don't remember the original series doing this at all, because they didn't need to. Like, you get the one iconic exposition dump in the intro for the original cartoon, but they don't ever like overuse that narrative device. This one, again, they feel like they need to spell it out more and more, or they're just not confident that it's coming through in the actual dialogue scenes that they're writing and the interaction between the characters. So they had Iroh give one like boilerplate speech. Like, I can't even remember that, any piece of it, but I'm just like, what are we, like, this is tying the episode together and the themes of the show overall, maybe, I don't know, because they don't actually put enough work into making you feel that or having the characters embody that through their character interactions. So it just felt like a crutch they were trying to use, which again speaks to how they use dialogue as a whole.
Yeah.
Instead of just allowing a visual medium to convey things visually, using the power of cut or editing, anything like that, to help convey the story that they're trying to convey.
That's why I felt like a play. Like, I feel like if this was a play and they were out there doing this stuff on a stage, I think it'd be more acceptable if it was just more dialogue like that, because it's harder to convey those things in a play. Like, there's still ways to do it, but it makes more sense this way. When you have a visual medium where you can cut and get close in on things and move the camera around, you have so much more freedom to do stuff. And they just chose not to do it on a giant budget, a huge budget. If this was like a little show on Netflix and they had only so much time, even those shows do it better, because they just understand the principle that you are making a television show. You're making a film. You're making something with a camera that you can move. You can physically pick up the camera and you can put it somewhere else. You can get a shot of something else. And you have the time to do it because you are on an infinitely large budget. But you can feel where the budget is going. And it's the sets and the costuming and the CGI. And that's where all of the budget went. And they didn't give a shit about anything else. They just wanted to make it look like Avatar. And it didn't even stick the landing on those regards.
There's some places that looked good. There's some elements like in that first episode, the South Pole stuff, that I was like, this is coming across really nicely.
Yeah, but I can make that argument.
There are definitely other areas, like the spirit world and that whole thing, like the gimmick they try to use there was ugly. So
yeah, but yeah,
I definitely hit and miss on the sets.
I could make the argument that M. Night Shyamalan's movie also, like the sets and the costuming and all that stuff looked good in the movie. I enjoyed it. I think the North Pole in the M. Night Shyamalan movie also looked good. Like I think there was plenty, all the costumes looked good, which was great. But other than that, it's like you need to make it a story worth watching. That's why we didn't like the M. Night Shyamalan movie. Is it had nothing to do with the costumes or making it look accurate. It had to do with the story. I would rather it look a little inaccurate or a little different and still have the same basic principle of story than trying to get it perfectly right.
True. Your point about it feels like it could have been on a stage, like serve as a stage play.
Mm-hmm.
Again, it's never not funny that the best adaptation so far has been the Ember Island Players that they did in season 3. So yeah, still has yet to be topped as an adaptation of the Avatar story. But yeah, the other thing about that too is if it were on a stage play, at least they would have to do a lot better with the acting. Because that was the other major issue here. Now, some of the actors, of course, are kids. Mm-hmm. So you can't blame them too much, especially with, you know, child actors. You need solid direction in there to help them, especially when it's a weak script. You need people in there to help them really understand the characters, the tone, and the emotion of the scenes mm-hmm. they're trying to convey. I was not feeling any of that for a lot of the like gang that we had here. And a lot of the adult actors too. Like that's the thing. It was a problem across the board. There were a few, and we'll like talk about them, that I think did ultimately work and were believable. But a lot of them, again, it was not clicking. The emotion was not there. And that, one of my biggest complaints of the show is how they massacred our boy Aang.
Mm-hmm.
The kid is not fun at all.
Yeah.
That's like, what do you think of when you think of the original Avatar thing? Like it's him going on a little air ball and running into the pillar there. Mm-hmm. It's him doing all these goofy things, like trying to have a laugh, just play around because he's a kid. And that was the big dynamic of it, of he's technically like 112 years old, but he actually is just 12. And he has the biggest responsibility anyone could ever have. But he just wants to have fun and chill and be with his friends. Never once do you see this kid play around. Can you think of one? I'm like, okay, I was waiting for it. I was like, when are they going to go penguin sledding, or at least just sledding? Okay, you don't want to do the penguins, CGI budget, whatever, but have them go play, like have them do something fun. And they don't. So I'm like, what are we doing here? And again, what they did was the opposite of what they should have. And they just made them so mopey and so depressing mm-hmm. and just so one note of every episode. He was talking about, oh, I ran away. I let everyone down. I need to make up for that. I'm the Avatar. Which is crazy because, number one, they changed the original. He did run away in the original. And so he could believably have that like bit of guilt over running away and letting everyone down. In this one, he doesn't. He just flies away. He's like doing driving around at night basically with Appa. And then the storm comes and he gets taken down by that. But he didn't actively leave. He
was like, let's just go think about it.
Happened to be out of town. Yeah, he was just, yeah. So they don't even give him the actual flaw of running away. But then they still have everyone, even like his past Avatar lives, who technically should know like that he didn't obviously run away or didn't intend to. They just have them all attacking him for that and being like, you let us down. You did this, this, and that. I don't get why that was such an emphasis where it overtook every other part of his personality. And again, the whole thing is like, he's supposed to be fun and then have that, you know, burden, that responsibility that he's trying to run away from and trying to escape. But then he eventually accepts it. This one, it just doesn't have that same power to it because we don't like Aang because he's just not the same character. He's not got any of that complexity, but especially none of that energy, the goofiness. So yeah, that was rough to see mm-hmm. for sure.
Yeah, he didn't even waterbend.
Yeah, I put that in there. I was like, why? He doesn't waterbend.
I was hoping that in the last episode that I have not seen yet, he would waterbend a little bit, but he didn't even waterbend.
He doesn't even try. That's the other thing too, which some things here and there, it's like, okay, do I dislike it because it actually doesn't work, or do I dislike it because it's a change from the original? I think this change truly doesn't work, where they make them go to the northern, North Pole in order to stop an attack, because Aang gets a vision, or like Kyoshi gives him a vision in the original. Again, the whole point of going to the Northern Water Tribe is so that they can learn waterbending yeah. from a master, and they're like trying to progress on the journey there, him and Katara together. But in this one, they just have him trying to get there to stop some vision, which again, I don't know why now all of a sudden he has visions, and why she was like, oh, if you saw it, it's going to happen. Like, they can now see the future, I guess. Okay. It's just a weaker change. And then it allows them, I guess, to just ignore the fact that he should be learning waterbending and trying to progress. So
now he has to stuff his waterbending training into season two with his earthbending training.
Exactly. Or what they're probably going to do is just a massive time jump, and then we're not going to see any of the actual waterbending training, which is so dumb. Now he's just going to, in season two, we're just going to see him airbend and waterbend as he's trying to learn earthbending. And it's so silly. We also don't get to see him try firebending. That whole Zhang Zhang thing where he injures Katara, and then now until season three, he like doesn't want to pick up firebending at all because he was worried about the destruction of it. It's such a compelling plot point.
Yeah.
Not at all in the first season. That also tied in with Katara doing the like learning that she has healing powers.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't come in factor at all. It's just in the final episode, she's like sent over to the healers, which are all the female waterbenders, and learns it from that. But then she doesn't even like pick it up. She doesn't actually learn it there. So again, they overlook that critical part of her character. I don't get it. Some of these changes were just mind-boggling.
There's just so little patience in the storytelling. They just want to jump to the next plot point and then jump and jump and jump. There's no scene where we can just really just sit with the characters and get to know them. It's just straight exposition, which I don't understand, because time-wise, it's 8 episodes. They're each an hour long. In the original Avatar show, it's like, what, 20-something episodes in the first season, probably?
20.
But they're each 20-ish minutes long when you cut out the commercial breaks. So time-wise, they have similar amounts of time being devoted to them. You had 8 hours to tell the story in this live-action version, which is much more than M. Night Shyamalan was given. And I feel like even in the M. Night Shyamalan version, we had moments where we just sat with the characters and watched them interact with each other, if I recall correctly. It's like, you've just taken every basic principle of storytelling and just thrown it out the window because you're trying to adapt to this one show instead of writing something original. And you're just, you wrote on a chalkboard every single plot point that you have to hit. You started combining plot points for the sake of storytelling, which is fine. You can do that. And then they just took all of the character development stuff and was like, well, we don't have time for this. And just threw it out.
And again, that's the genius of that original show. And we went through it again, episode by episode. And we talked about how each character got progressed, which is an incredible thing to do to balance the like 5 central characters of our original gang, and then Zuko and Iroh. Each of them, in the episode they appear, something is happening. We're either learning something new about them, or a character trait is being reinforced, or they're going through a change, or something's like being challenged. In this one, I don't think they're able to hit that same thing, despite there being like fewer episodes in order to do that in. Because again, they had to have like a completed arc in each episode of that original series for its first season. This one, they don't have to. They can like blend the things a little more and just, you know, have the cliffhanger effect, basically.
Which could be an advantage. Like, you could use that to your advantage to blend the storylines together. You could combine lessons and tell things at the same time. It's even more impactful.
Exactly. But they don't. And then we get an even more stripped down version of the lessons they should be learning. Which, yeah, we'll talk about that. I mean, Sokka's sexism thing, for instance, is one that they entirely ignore. And it's such a 4-episode arc in like the first episodes of the original series. It's just quick and easy. It's going from like him having a bad belief to a good belief, being humbled, learning that. It's great. Why'd they take that out? Like, what was the point of it? But then they still try and retain like the Paku stuff later on. But it doesn't make sense. It doesn't ring true if, you know, the whole, you know, water tribe, if they're not, if that culture isn't spread throughout of, you know, the patriarchal view on who should be doing what and who's allowed to do water bending and all that. If, and it's believable if Sokka was raised in that culture that he would have that mindset. But then when he goes to the Kyoshi Island, he learns a better way and is able to understand, okay, like women can be warriors. They don't have to be this, this, and that that I was taught growing up. Again, just simple, positive character arc. And they stripped it away. For what reason? I don't know. Again, his whole arc in this, I can't even tell because it was meant to be him learning how to be a leader in the original series, like learning how to be a well-balanced, strong leader. And it isn't just like being the best fighter. Like that's his whole arc. In this one, they try and do something similar to that, but now they have him wanting to be an engineer.
Yeah,
I guess like the engineer guy is like, you know what? You have these capabilities. Maybe you shouldn't be a warrior. You should be like an engineer. I'm like, okay. It's good, I guess, to be like, yeah, your skill set doesn't have to be limited to the thing that you thought it was or that you want to live up to of being in your father's image. But he doesn't. He's not an engineer for the rest of the series. So what are we doing setting that up if the true arc he goes on is to be more of a leader? So that just also felt odd. It feels like they were missing the point of what his actual arc was intended to be. Yeah, for characters overall, how are you feeling? Like, which ones do you think came out the best, and which ones do you think came out the worst for you?
I think Zuko came out good. As good as it could be. I think they stuck to the basic principles of what his story is supposed to be. I think the person who's playing him did a good job. I think they didn't do anything too crazy with it, like crazy different. It was a pretty similar story to what the original story was. I'm looking forward to see where they go with Zuko. Personally, I think they'll develop it in a very good way. Azula, I didn't like.
Mm-hmm.
I think, what is your thoughts on, because obviously it's a live action show, they're trying to reach a more adult audience. What is your thoughts on them taking the brutality of war and like cranking it up to an 11 in the live action version?
I think it's good to an extent. Again, the fact
that's
what
that I was going to say.
It's like surrounded by, again, such a childlike show in the way the characters are drawn and the way that the dialogue, again, just the exposition of it is so poorly done.
Mm-hmm.
Where everything's getting spelled out, it feels so childlike in that way, but then they want to have the brutality of, again, seeing people get burned to a crisp. So the juxtaposition is weird because it just doesn't mesh. It doesn't feel like it all is part of one true believable world.
I would agree.
But I like that they're trying to lean in more to the fact of, okay, this is a massive war going on that's taking this whole world and putting into chaos. And mm-hmm. So we're getting to see a bit more of the destruction and the impacts of that.
Yeah.
I think like after the bombing in Omashu, they like spend more time just walking through the rubble and seeing the people that were impacted. I think those changes are good. I just wish, again, they were actually able to be a bit more sophisticated and mature with
mm-hmm.
how they did everything else so that it felt more believable when we did get into those darker or more, you know, serious subject matter with war.
I very specifically did not like the scene where we first meet Azula. She's tricking the people into sneaking into the temple. And then Ozai burns them alive in front of her and she smiles. I feel like it's just off the bat, it makes us hate Azula and not want to have any complexity of her character. She's just an antagonist. Like, that's all it is. And like, yes, in the original show, Azula is the secondary antagonist and probably the primary antagonist to Zuko, really. We get that. But for most of the show, she has more dynamicism to her. Like, we have scenes where she is opening up and relating to it. And it's going to be hard to do that after we watched her watch Ozai burn people alive that she handed to him on a silver platter. Like, it's just like, if that's the first impression we get, it's hard to make there be any complexity to her character, in my opinion.
Right. I like that they did that introduction there because I thought it shows the viciousness of Azula.
I just wish he hadn't walked away before he burned him alive.
No, yeah, I think it was good that she, because we see, I mean, I guess the first introduction technically is just that one shot of her smiling when Zuko's getting burnt in the original show when they have their Agni Kai. So I think that is in line with her character. What I didn't like was the fact that I felt they were trying to overly humanize her later on, like having her, you know, try and live up to the father's expectations, and then he's not acknowledging her when she is doing well and succeeding, so she's getting frustrated by
that. Yeah, but see, that's the two extremes. I feel like that, that's the two extremes, is that they want her to be this terrible villain, even more horrifying than the original series in her brutality, but at the same time, they're trying to make her even more human than the original series.
Exactly, and that's the part I didn't like. I wanted her to be more, like, let her be just a villain. Again, I don't know why in this first season, when it's supposed to be Zuko, it's like the initial antagonist, but then Zhao quickly comes in and we see that, okay, he's the real antagonist that we're facing for both our gang and then Zuko. Again, brilliant writing choice to like bring in a bigger bad there, and allow us to start aligning slowly with Zuko, even though he is an antagonist. Why throw in another antagonist in the first season? So now Zuko's like third level, so he's obviously, and they do this too with Iroh, where he, like, early on he has a conversation with Aang, is just chilling with him. It's like, we already know that Iroh's like not at all a bad guy, doesn't at all want to hurt Aang or do anything like this. Like, just let us believe that these characters that are set up as antagonists are antagonists initially, and then slowly peel away those layers. Again, like, from the jump, we already know Zuko and Iroh. Like, oh yeah, they're bad, they're Fire Nation, but no one's going to believe that they're actually bad. Because then you have Zhao, who's their enemy, but then you have Azula puppeteering Zhao, who's now the other enemy. And Ozai above that, it's like,
which I hate. Get way more Ozai, of course, this first puppeting season. Puppeting Zhao. Zhao is such a good villain in the first season of Avatar. And in this show, he sucks. Oh my god, dude, Zhao is so bad in the show. He's one of my least favorite adaptations. Because they just took him and they made him, in the original series, he's actually a complex and smart villain. And he's very capable and he's very threatening. And in this one, he's just kind of a puppet. And he's like, I don't egotistical. Like the puppet part. It's so annoying. He's supposed to be like a good villain. He's supposed to be good at his job. And he's just, he's a weak commander that he happens to have this lucky situation fall on his lap. And he rides it to being an admiral and just keeps succeeding. He keeps falling upward is what it is.
Right. Which, there's like, I guess they're trying to say something with that, but I did prefer more of, and they retain some of it. Again, him just having like such a big ego and him being so concerned about how history is going to look.
I guess the ego is fine, but like in the show, in the animated show, it matches his skill level, like, or to a degree. Like,
he's like, he has an ego,
but he is a real threat. Yes.
Yes.
But in the live action show, he's not really a threat at all. He just happens to be the puppet of the real threat, which is Azula, apparently.
True. So yeah, that does undercut him. And yeah, he's like sandwiched between these other like villains that we are already relating to more and are seeing more in Zuko, and then the ones that appear to be the bigger bad, like Azula and then Ozai above it. So it's like we already know that he's not the biggest threat, whereas he was the biggest threat in season one of the animated show. So I wish they would have just allowed him to be more of that. There are some moments, again, to him that I did enjoy. They just made him very over the top with how concerned he was with how history was going to look back on him.
The characters that I did like, there were a lot of good side characters that I think they did really well. I think Suki was done really well. I think Jet was done really well. I think parts of the Mechanist were done really well. I think, God, who else was in there? I think Ko, the Face Stealer, I think that was done well.
He looked good. Yeah. I was amazed by that. Yeah, the CGI on that one, they definitely made him look creepy. In their money's worth.
Yeah. Other than that, there's not much. I think Sokka was done well. I think not in his characterization, but I think the performance. I think they cast the right guy for Sokka.
Yeah, I was very mixed on that. Initially, it felt like they were making the same mistakes as Shyamalan. With him, he was just not funny very early on. He was like overly serious. Again, he didn't crack any jokes when they were like on the boat and stuff like that. So I was like, oh no, they're already making those missteps. But then they folded in a lot more of the comedy there of him trying to crack jokes here and there. I don't know, something about it. There's just actors here and there where you just don't mesh with them or don't click with them. This guy was one of them.
Really?
Where, yeah.
I thought he was
good. I can see, like, what he was going for in places. Sometimes it was believable. Other times it was just, I did not care for it. So that was hit or miss. And no fault of, like, the guy, really. I think he probably was. I think Zuko's actor was the strongest of those kids.
I would agree, yeah. He was great.
And yeah, there were a few instances where, yeah, I felt like he was a little bit more of a whiny, petulant child rather than an angsty, frustrated teen.
I think that's okay. For the most part, I'm not too upset that they went that direction.
No, there were a few times. Again, mostly it was good characterization because that's how Zuko was in the original. But there's a few moments where, yeah, again, it was just like, okay, like how old are you? Are you 16? Are you like 6? So ultimately, he came out the best, I think, of our young characters.
Thoughts on Iroh?
Sokka, again, was fine. Iroh, if, again, I never saw the original and this came out, I don't think he would be as beloved or iconic of a character.
Not nearly,
He was eh. He wasn't that.
Which is like, so charming. Disappointing. Because Iroh is funny. Iroh is the center of so many people's attention in the original series. Iroh is the greatest. And in this one, he doesn't feel like he's carrying that amount of, that like sheer amount of wisdom that Iroh has walking through this world, which is disappointing. He just feels like a normal person who just happens to be nice, like a nice, normal person, instead of being this incredibly wise and smart man.
Agreed. Yeah. That's the thing too. Original Avatar, there's so many amazing characters. You could take your pick from like 6 or 7 characters to be your favorite. And they all make sense because they're all so well developed and incredible and distinct and have their own personalities and all this. So the fact that they struggled so much with adapting a lot of these characters, again, it's like, how do you go wrong with Aang, Katara, Sokka? Like, they're all extremely strong. And then you add in Zuko, Iroh, of course, Toph later on, Azula. Like, these are all fantastic characters. Why does the live action version of them, when you're actually having a person able to embody all of their movements rather than just their voice, why are they so much more hollow and lifeless? It doesn't make any sense. And again, that goes to like the writing as a starting point, and then the direction they were giving them, and then I think it places too. Again, the acting was not the greatest. Katara is the other biggest letdown.
Mm-hmm.
So sad. Again, Katara. Love her in the original. Again, they're all amazing. But yeah, the Katara was such a strong, amazing character. Tell me why.
Tell me Aang, why.
Aang and Jet are teaching her how to waterbend in this one. Aang makes sense for one moment. He did it like 2 or 3 times. For one moment, since he actually is a bender and would have a bit more of that understanding, I think that that's good to like get her through an initial block.
In the beginning, yeah.
It shouldn't have been like that first moment, though. She should be able to make a water ball.
Yeah.
It was like that later moment by the river that they should have been able to have him come in and be like giving more complex guidance of how to do bending. Mm-hmm. But then Jet, my boy Jet, is like doing a therapy session of like, oh, your thoughts of your mom is blocking you from being able to waterbend. Why would he know how that works and waterbending at all? Like, that doesn't make any sense. And just overall as well, like they try and get to the same endpoint of Paku being like, you are now Aang's master. Although in this one, I think they just say, you're a master at waterbending. But we don't get to see natural progression of that, of her like training.
She does a little bit of training with the water scroll, but she doesn't really do much of it. It's just implied. A little bit.
Yeah. But that's like very initial, and we don't see it constantly. Like again, you get the breathing room in that original series where like 2 or 3 separate episodes start off with them just chilling, like in a watering hole, something like that, which is great because you get to see them hang out together and be friends.
It's more about the journey
with the gang.
It's more about the journey in that original show. And this one, it feels like it's all about getting to that destination where the plot happens.
Exactly. And so you get to see them just like chilling, but then you get to see them also like working on stuff. So they're able to have both. They're all just chilling, in the watering hole.
There's barely any scenes in this version of them traveling at all about any journey. They're already, they're just always somewhere. They get there and they're there, and then they have the plot happen.
And then they split them up as well. So you don't even get enough of them as a trio for them to feel like true friends. Because again, that's the point they're leading up to at the end, is they try and make Aang's whole thing like, oh, to be the Avatar, you can't be friends with anyone because you need to make hard choices. And then at the end, they're like, oh no, it's you guys that make me strong. But we don't feel that because he doesn't even spend any time with them. So that just doesn't work out at all. And then as far as her waterbending and the progression of that, again, they don't have her being able to train alongside Aang, which would have helped us see her working at this more. They also, again, don't incorporate the healing thing until the very end when she's at the Northern Water Tribe. And then she immediately like casts it aside. She's like, cool, but when do I learn how to fight? Which is kind of like how she was in the original, but she had an appreciation already of like the healing from having to do that before and like discovering that. In this one, they just throw that to the side. And then you miss this and the whole like final episode, they try and have like the women empowerment moment where she brings all the healers, because again, all the female waterbenders are relegated to being healers. During the siege, like during that battle, she brings them to Paku and is like, we all want to fight. Let us fight. And he's like, okay, sure. In my head, I'm thinking like, okay, wow, cool moment. If these people have never learned how to fight, they're not going to be doing good. And then also, who's now like taking care of the people that are getting injured? Like in a war, you need your fighters, yes, but you also need the medics that are like treating people. And if they're in, like trained to do that, now no one's healing anyone. Mm-hmm. But then we have them fighting, which they're not trained for, which means they could get hurt. But then who is going to take care of them if they do get hurt? Like, it was just one of those moments where they're like, yes, this will make people feel good and it'll give her a good moment. But then when you think about it for more than 2 seconds, you're like, it doesn't make sense. And again, it's like you can tear down like that patriarchal structure that they had there without also throwing all the logic to the side and also making like the healing aspect of waterbending like that you can also emphasize as important and crucial and necessary. But people should be allowed to choose which path they want to take with that and whether they want to master both, which is what Katara ends up doing, which I think is a great lesson. But in this one, she, again, just is like, no, let's all go out and fight. Okay, cool. We didn't see her be able to like train enough throughout the rest of the series to be convinced that she can fight. And then also bringing all the other healers of the tribe and bringing them into danger. It's just like, okay, it's not well thought through in the slightest. Yeah. Let's talk about some positives, things that we liked. You brought up one, Jet, the Mechanist. I think the whole in concept, combining Omashu.
Yeah, I agree.
The Jet episode, the Northern Air Temple episode, I thought that was like, that was great.
Yeah.
Like, okay.
In theory, I was like, this is a good way to combine these storylines into one solid hour long storyline. I thought it was very strong until they actually did it.
They mess it up. Yes. Which is so unfortunate because, in concept, having that happen and having Omashu be like a center point for all these different stories going on, it allows you, one, like if you have to build the set of Omashu, that saves time because you're not just doing it for a quick one-off episode, like 20 minutes of the original series. Now you're spending more time there. They spend like 2 Oha episodes there. Mm-hmm. And you're able to combine the whole Jet thing, get that out of the way, but do it in a new fashion. Like him being the one that gets him into the city, I thought was an interesting change. The issue, though, is they just don't make it compelling in the slightest. They don't have any real back and forth between the gang and Jet. Like Aang and Sokka never even actually interact with him, really. But then Aang
finds out that he's the one bombing them, and he doesn't even know his name. He just goes, It's the robes from the guy
that brought us in. Too, of like, they put it together from the ropes. Like, that was how they found out that they were using the blasting
jelly. And once
jelly
again, a
stupid reveal.
No inserts to the robes whatsoever. Like, none even slightly. It's just him holding a robe from a great distance. And you're like, I guess that's the robe because he said it is.
Or something. Yeah, that was truly silly. They also...
We only learn things in the show because they tell us.
Yeah, again, instead of any amount of, like, oh, let's show it.
The audience cannot make any connections themselves. We just have to tell them what is going on.
Mm-hmm. And then I thought it was a compelling thing, which, again, if they had interwoven the stories more, because there's that moment where Katara was, like, looking at the mechanist, talking with someone, and she's like, oh, that's the traitor. If they built that up more of, like, okay, which one of these people... Is the traitor? Is it Jed? Is it the mechanist?
That would have been
interesting mystery. And you could have built up like the first episode in Amashu around that, mm-hmm. then have the second be the fallout from it. But they didn't do that. We just cut through immediately of finding out, again, Aang somehow putting that together that, oh, it was Jed. And then Katara immediately putting her away.
What I hate is she has a conversation with him and she says, no, you guys are wrong. And then leaves, sees Jet. Jet goes, no, they're right. I'm blowing them up. And she goes, that's wrong. Leaves. And then the next scene, she goes back. She goes, you guys were right. It just feels like the most unnatural flow of events from scene to scene. And then also in the original series, when she finds out that Jet is bombing, she's like, I'm going to stop you. He ties her up. Like he tries to prevent her from ruining the plot. But in this one, he just kind of like goes, all right, I guess she just left. Even though she says, I can't let you do this. And she runs away. He just goes, all right.
Right.
And then they stop it.
Yeah. It doesn't make any sense there.
Characters just make bad, stupid choices.
The other thing with Katara's whole character and like being just a worse version of the original where she has, like they try and have her there, like stand up for it, but you don't feel any of that fire that she had in the original. Again, they cut out some of the other aspects, like the whole episode with Haru with like the prison where she has to go there and is trying to do this whole speech to rile everyone up.
Yeah.
Like we don't get stuff like that in here. But then they also make her like she's getting big brothered by Sokka the whole time, which wasn't like her dynamic in the original is she is functioning as like the mother of the group because obviously of the trauma of losing her mother and she's having to step up and like take that role as well as being such a strong fighter and being clever and coming with plans and things like this. But she is the one that's like guiding Sokka and Aang and helping make those decisions. And this one, they like actively have her be like, stop treating me like I'm a baby, like I'm a little sister. And he's like, then stop acting like one. And this was in the fight where she's like, no, we can trust Jet. And then obviously she's wrong. So then that was the other thing too I didn't like is in the original, they all sort of were under his spell. Like they were all charmed by him.
Yeah.
And this one, it's only Katara. So then it does make her look a little bit silly. And then when they have that fight where she's like, stop treating me like a baby. And he's like, you are one. And then they prove that, oh, she is because she didn't see like what they had seen instantly, apparently, which I think is dumb. Like it does a disservice to her character. It does make her feel like she's like a little kid in the group rather than someone that is trying to compensate for like losing her mother and feels like she has to take on that role with the group and then does it well and is like has that fierce quality to her but also that protective, kind, compassionate quality to her. They strip her of so much of the personality. I don't get it. Very unfortunate. And again, that whole plot line, again, they botched the merging of them. The Boomy part as well was... That was something.
It's interesting.
It existed.
Dude, this tunnel of love.
And then they throw that in there too.
They put Sokka and Katara in the tunnel of love.
A season two plot they put in here, which, again, now it's like I'm thinking how do they get back into the city in season two? Or do they not? They're just not going to come back to Amashu? I don't know.
They also completely changed the lesson of the tunnel of love. Like originally it is you put out your light. You follow the crystals, you're done. That's it. Like, that was the whole point.
Right.
A, they put Katara and Sokka in there, brother and sister. Awkward. Yeah. Whoopsie daisy. Second off, they put out the lights and they follow the crystals. It doesn't even do anything. They have to wait until the badger mole show up to.
I know, yeah. Like, that doesn't. Like,
what is even the point of the crystals then?
Doesn't solve it. It's also why.
Expectations, I guess.
Why put the badger moles in there if that's meant to be like a season two thing? Because that's all about earth bending. Why did that get?
Yeah, they skipped through water bending straight into earth bending.
Yeah, so that made no sense. And then here's the other big part about this. What about my boy Aang? That was his moment. That was when they had their first kiss.
It would have been so, dude. It's such a good shot in the original show. And they just.
Yeah, with the light fading out as they're like leaning in. And it's a whole great moment, too. Here's the thing, they don't show any of Aang's crush for Katara this whole season, which is wild. Why would they do that? So there's two possible explanations. One is they think the kid is still too young looking for them to like have them start having any romantic things. Mm-hmm. Here's the thing though. It's season one. It's only Aang pursuing Katara in season one. There's like one moment maybe in the fortune teller where they're like, oh, you're going to have a strong bender and that's who you're going to be with. And then she sees Aang bending things like crazy and she's like, oh, that's like the one moment where you see Katara even flirt with the idea of Aang being a romantic interest. It's only Aang pursuing Katara and it's just like him liking her. Like they don't even pursue anything at all. Season two is when that starts. So, and again, this is the other issue with Aang too, is I've seen some of the interviews, like the cast interviews, and in real life, he does have that like goofy energetic quality. So I don't know why they would not let him put any of that into the actual character.
Yeah, it's so disappointing because he could have done it.
He could have, but he's also from those like cast interviews. He's already like his voice has dropped. He's already like taller, I'm sure. So he's, and hey, this guys, is without me, season Aang. Two. I'm the Avatar. So he's already, which I mean, yeah, when you cast real people, real teenagers,
this is going to happen.
This happens in every show, you know, they grow up. Right. So they had to anticipate he's going to hit puberty. So maybe they were just waiting for him to do that, but it's like, allow him, especially as a kid. Cause that makes sense. Like he's seeing this girl for the first time. He's going to have a crush on her. Let him have that. And then in season two, when they're a little bit closer in age and whatnot, he doesn't look so much like a kid, they'll be able to like actually lean into that. So, and then again, season two probably isn't going to film until later this year, maybe next year. So he's going to look way older.
Yeah.
So I don't know why they didn't allow us to have that. And now we can't go back to Tunnel of Love. Maybe we will, but it's like that was their moment. That was
going to be like a really tall, grown ass Aang. He's going to be like 5'10". He's gonna be as tall as Sokka
for real, and then in season three he's gonna be even way taller. They're gonna have to like make sure he doesn't have super jacked or anything like that.
He looks like he's 20 something
probably too though. Yeah, they're gonna be, that's like always the thing that happens. So they're gonna have to, which I think is a good change for them to just expand the timeline rather than it being within 1 year of the comic coming. It's like over multiple years so that they can naturally grow. But
I think that's like, fair. Or alternatively, you could just do it Lord of the Rings style and just film it back to back to back and then take your time in post.
True. We'll see, though, if they do season two and three back to back, because they could. They've renewed both of them.
Yeah, I think they should, for the sake of the aging, just film them back to back. Just the filming.
I'd be fine with like an older Aang, because if they get him soon, because now he looks, because they had him as a kid. Now he's like in like a mid-teen, so he still looks 15 young.
Now or something.
And then if they get him when he's like 17 or 18 or whatever, I think it's like a fine progression. They just need to do that. They can't do what like Stranger Things is doing and have them be like, these kids are going to be approaching like, they're all able to drink.
They're in their 20s.
Like rent a car soon. Yeah, they're in their 20s and they're still playing like 14-year-olds or something. It's ridiculous.
It's so funny.
They can't do that. They can't have like 18-year-old Aang playing a 12-year-old Aang.
I remember in the first season, they're actually kids, and then you get to the second season, and Gaten Matarazzo's voice is dropped, and the rest of them haven't yet, and you're like, "Ooh, that's kind of jarring." And you get to the third season, and they look like just adults, and you're like, "Jesus Christ!" It's supposed to be a couple months later. It's so funny. And then season four, and now season five.
So as long as they can avoid that and just have it naturally progress, like just be like Aang is not 12 in season two, like just have him be whatever age the actor is. But that means, yeah, so they've undercut that initial romance, like laying the seeds for it. And then they took away the big Tunnel of Love moment. So are they not going to do Katara and Aang?
That would be really
the whole
sad.
Series.
What if they go with Katara and Zuko? What if they appease that fan crowd? And
that's
go
what
with
I was
Katara
saying, the whole Zutara thing. Now, here's my take on that. we have the original series, we know what truly should happen, mm-hmm. right? It is Aang and Katara, which I'm so happy about. Like, again, as a kid, I was in Aang's shoes. I had a crush on Katara. So I was rooting for my boy the whole way. And then at the end, when they like end up together, I'm like, yes, we got him. So obviously, I know that's like the way it should be. However, this new live action show, it's already not living up. Like, it is not at all going to capture the same experience. So if they wanted to just go silly with it and just change things up, which again, this would totally prevent them from doing like Legend of Korra in the future if they wanted to. But if they wanted to have Katara end up with someone else, end up with Zuko, I'm fine with them exploring that because I already know this is not my Aang, not my Katara, not my Zuko.
This is a different version, yeah.
Do what they want to do, yeah. Go have fun with these playthings because these are not the characters from Avatar. So it could be an interesting way to change it so fundamentally, like have a completely different romance. What would you feel if they ended up doing that? If we saw like in season two, like when they're trapped in Ba Sing Se and she's going to try and heal his scar mm-hmm. and then they kiss from that and then Aang walks in. But again, that wouldn't even have the impact because Aang, in this one, we don't see him care about her at all romantically.
I don't think I would like, I think they can wait. I think Aang's crush on Katara can come in season two and it'll still make sense. I just don't know if they'll do it. I don't think I would like it if Katara and Zuko ended up together. I don't. It just feels wrong to me, you know? It's not what I think should happen.
I agree.
I'm not so again, on the people side that are of them being together.
Shipping that for the original series, I'm like, no.
I just don't see it.
But in this one, again, if they wanted to expand on it more, I'm fine with it just because, again, it is not the true Avatar experience. So
yeah.
I won't care that much. Some of the other changes, we started of like the positives and we immediately dropped back into the negatives, which tells you a lot about the show. Mm-hmm. Overall, the bending I thought was pretty good.
There were some goofy CGI
moments, but a lot of the, again, Zuko, like his martial art.
Firebending will always look the best. It did look the best. Firebending is just the easiest one to make look good, I think. Objectively.
Yeah, water's the hardest.
I think air is the hardest. Because air is not visible. So what you're showing is not actually air moving. You're showing dust particles moving through the air to show that there is air moving. I feel like air will always be, other than Aang flying, which just looks rough no matter what. The push of like you're pushing air or like you're doing like a spin move in air will always look hard in live action because in the animated one, they just take very, very light blue lines, make it look like wind being pushed. In this one, you can't visualize air in real life. You can't visualize the push of air in real life. We can't see wind. We see things moving in the wind.
Mm-hmm. True. But that would have been an opportunity for them to make things a lot more interesting and like approach it creatively.
They did some cool stuff. Like when Aang goes to cover up... when they're getting attacked by the archers, when they escape from the prison and Aang shoots up all the dust to make it look like they can't see. I think, mm-hmm. I think things like that work pretty well. It's the flying.
Good,
that
looks but rough. It's using more of that, of like using the environment around you of like either the snow or the dust. They should have put them again. Those like old fashioned, like wire Kung Fu movies that you'd have the leaves going all around.
Yeah, dude,
crazy, acting crazy, like do that as well. So they did some of it for sure. I wish they would have been able to lean into it more.
Yeah.
But yeah, the earthbending at least, yeah, they avoided that cardinal sin of Shyamalan's where they had five people lifting up one tiny rock and then pushing it very slowly in the direction of a firebender. So they avoided that, which is, you know, definitely what they were trying to do. Like, you can't get embarrassed. Yeah. So that was good. Aang and Zuko's conversation in episode 6 when he rescues him. I thought that one was good. Like that was a good mm-hmm. expansion on, because the original, again, there's not too much time. We get the beat of Aang being like, do you think we would have been friends like 100 years ago if we weren't at war and stuff like that? In this one, they were able to talk to each other a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
And so I like that. I like that they were able to connect on that front. It was one of the few moments where it was like believable.
Yeah.
Like, I felt like they were real characters and they were actually connecting with each other and it wasn't just so flat.
Yeah, but my problem is this is where they pick and choose their battles, I think, poorly, in the sense that we have two episodes in Omashu where they've taken like six storylines from season one plus another one from season two with the Tunnel of Love and smashing them together in just two episodes, and they don't do it well, even though they could have. They don't do it well. But then they take this Masks episode, which is one episode in season one, and they expand upon it for an hour. It is just, well, I guess it's two because he goes to...
they combine it with the whole Spirit World stuff, yeah.
Well, that's not even referenced in the Masks episode. Well, I mean, it ends with him going back to Spirit World, but the entire Masks episode is he goes to Avatar Roku's Island, which is a separate episode. And then it's that episode, and then the episode where he breaks out, and we learn more about Zuko's past. But it's mostly that second episode. And that's why people like that episode the most out of the live action episodes, is because they've taken one episode from the animated series and they've expanded upon it instead of shrinking it down and mixing it with other episodes. And you could do either. You can take multiple episodes from the animated series, combine them together into one storyline. And if you do it well, it'll still work. They just don't do that. And they've wasted a whole episode of the live actions just to expand upon Zuko's character and Aang's character and the combination between the two. And it's like the one time they do any good character development is just taking this one good character development from the animated show and doubling the length of it instead of using their time more wisely. You've only got 8 hours. You're going to spend 40 minutes of those 8 hours on one storyline from the first season, one 20-minute storyline from the first season. That seems crazy.
Yeah. It was one of their better episodes, though. So maybe they should have found a way to balance that out more. The other thing that I liked, the whole 41st Division thing, like that in concept of this very crew that he got banished for advocating for becomes the Navy, like crew that he has. I thought that was a nice, interesting change that they put in there. Mm-hmm. However, again, the reveal.
Dude, so the funny.
Power,
so
it's
funny.
So silly. Yeah, when he goes like,
but we're the 41st Division. Something that we already know because Ozai just said it in the flashback.
Yes.
Which is so funny.
Or it's like, obviously, why would he be telling the story about the 41st Division to this guy? Unless he was the 41st Division. Like, we can put those two and two together.
Also, Lieutenant G isn't that fucking stupid to where he forgot that he's the 41st Division and then goes, wait a minute. I am the 41st Division.
It's so silly. All his brain power went to the mutton chops. Keeping those nice and well-trimmed. So, yeah, again, just the power of a cut. Like, Game of Thrones, season six, like that whole reveal of Jon's lineage.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you can get it from just the cut. We go from that baby to Jon Snow, hit the like Winterfell theme song. It's amazing, even though you know it's coming, but the power of like seeing that realized in just a cut, a match cut. Why don't they do something like that here? Like just show the 41st Division showing up to the ship and it's him. And then cut back to him as it's
you the realization is that. Pouring over Ozai, his face. Ozai says, oh, take the 41st Division with you as your crew. That's the only line you needed. You could have just left that in there and cut back to Lieutenant G and then just had a moment of silence, of realization, and then that's it. That would have been fine.
Exactly. Anything that's just...
Literally the cut back, the cut back to Iroh and G, I was like, oh, that's a good thing that they added. And then he goes, but I'm the 41st Division. And I went, know. Oh, that's so
it
dumb.
Undercut the whole thing. I was like, you had it. You had a good, interesting expansion to the original story. And then they like just made it stupid. And then, yeah, Zuko like walking through everyone as they were like, oh, commander, or whatever it is. It was decent. I would have liked it more, though, if we like had more of an actual attachment to the people in that crew. Yeah. But, good in concept.
And Zuko hadn't treated him like such shit.
I know, he truly was like awful.
He treats him way, because like, in the animated show, he also treats him pretty badly, which is kind of like the bit. But he goes so far in this live action. He goes way too far. I'm like, yeah, even if he did save my life, he's still a shithead. I'd still hate him.
True. Yeah, and then just as we wrap up here, some other silliness that they did. Again, it could just be because it's a change from the original, but they obviously toned down Roku. So they make it where the avatar, he can only like touch base with the avatars if they're in, if he's in their temple or their shrine. Mm-hmm. And then they give the whole, like him being overcome by Roku at Roku's temple. They give that to Kiyoshi on Kiyoshi's Island. I'm mixed on it because I miss the mentorship relationship between Aang and Roku. Mm-hmm. I think it was such a clever way to show like, okay, Roku of the Fire Nation, like most recent avatar, is here helping our new avatar against the Fire Nation. It's just an interesting dynamic to have.
Plus Roku has so many good lessons.
Exactly. Yeah. And you're able to have him, and that's where they're able to have more of like, okay, if Aang needs to like verbalize something, he's going to do it to Roku rather than
like his therapist.
Rather than Appa. Ugh. Or again, just like saying it over and over again to himself.
Yeah. That shit's so funny.
The like shrine thing, at least they set rules for it, but again, it limits the specific mentorship relationship with Roku. And then I don't know how they're going to deal with that going forward, but that was like, okay, that was a change they made. Not the worst thing in the world, but not the biggest fan of it. The whole comet thing as well. Sozin's comet. They save that till the end as a post-credit scene in the final episode.
As a post-credit scene.
Ozai like being shown, yeah, that Sozin's comet is coming and it's about to arrive. Dude, and it's just like, that was the engine for the entire show. Like that was how you knew, okay, mm-hmm. we're trying to get to the Northern Water Tribe to learn waterbending. But now we have a time limit. Now we have a reason that we need to master all of the elements so that we can stop this.
That's the Fire Nation before they attack.
Yeah.
When they're in the library in the desert, is that Sozin's comet is coming on this day.
Well, that was...
Or no. It was...
Because that was the eclipse. The eclipse. And they learned, like, oh, this is when we can attack before Sozin's comet. Mm. But it was in the Roku episode. It's the Spirit World thing where they learn in the Roku's temple, they learn about Sozin's comet, I believe. Or no, right. I think Roku just tells him. He's just like straight up like, by the way, you are screwed unless you can learn all the elements. So then we now have that pressure of getting to the Water Tribe to learn that as well as all the other places. Like here, like when they're chilling out at the Water Tribe, they could just chill out there for the longest time. Like what pressure do they need? Because they don't know. We're shown it's Ozai like being told this. Aang has not learned. They have not learned. So they would just be chilling at the Water Tribe for the longest time with no need to go find an earthbending teacher or a firebending teacher. So that was an odd choice. And then they also, the whole ending part of season two, right, where Ba Sing Se has been conquered and they're leaving, and then you see the Fire Nation flags flying over Ba Sing Se, and Azula has done it. Like this was her victory. They take that and give it to her here for Omashu, which completely That's undercuts dumb. The season two reveal, which is great when they show up to Omashu again and they're like, oh no. And then they see it's been captured by the Fire Nation. We don't get that reveal. And then whenever they do the Ba Sing Se thing, that also won't hit as hard because we have already seen her conquer an unconquerable city. So it's like, what are we, why are we doing this? And overall, I don't think they should have had her in season one, but especially don't give her such a big victory that is literally copy and paste from what she does in season two, and you strip the impact of that when it comes around.
What if they cut out Ba Sing Se entirely?
There's no way. It's like the back half of season two. There's no way they do that.
That'd be crazy.
But again, they'll just probably do the same thing.
Because they say when they're in Omashu, one of them says, I think Iroh says, or Zuko says, this is the best the Earth Kingdom has to offer. And I was thinking, no, Ba Sing Se. Yeah. Omashu is like small fry, small fish compared to Ba Sing Se. Ba Sing Se is huge.
Yeah.
It's like Attack on Titan walls kind of huge.
For sure. It would be insane if they took away Ba Sing Se.
It's like the best part of season two is the conspiracy of Ba Sing Se.
Yeah.
Exactly. So yeah, cool. God, Avatar is such a good show.
It is. It's so good. So yeah, again, season two and three of this show, I think for the pod, I think we should continue to watch it.
Even though you're just saying because you know I won't watch it otherwise.
It'll be brutal to go through. Yeah, you won't watch it otherwise, but I want to chat about it. Just to go through again, like the adaptations they do, why do they make certain choices? Again, in this one, I think we both are agreed it was not a successful adaptation. But they have time to adjust, look back at all these mistakes, then hopefully course correct. Or again, they'll just throw everything to the wind and just start writing their own fan fiction. We get Zuko and Katara. They get rid of Ba Sing Se for some god awful reason.
That would be crazy.
Again, the whole Appa thing.
Yeah.
Like, that's such a crucial part of it.
It's such a strong emotion.
First season of live action, do you care about Appa at all?
I didn't even fucking see
him. We saw him for like 5 minutes total.
Yeah. I didn't give a shit about Appa.
And that's why it was so funny with Momo. Again, they like, in the final episode, the siege is happening and like a fireball comes. Momo pushes someone out the way and then gets hit by the rubble. And then he's just under there. And it's Sokka and Yue. And again, we've seen Momo maybe 5 minutes the whole episode, but certainly the whole series. Certainly Sokka doesn't care about him. Yue doesn't even know who Momo is. And they're like, oh no, we got to help Momo. And then they like go and they do the whole like CPR thing almost and like, oh, he's breathing. And she's like, we got to take him to the spirit well. So she goes there and like heals him basically. But they try and do a death fake out of like, oh no, Momo's gone.
That's like, so wild.
If you didn't watch the original show, I don't even think you'd know what his name is. Like he's
barely in the show. Yeah. That's so disappointing.
But yeah, that would have been crazy. If they killed Momo, which again, just a stupid, bold choice, which would at least make me love it for them just being like,
let's kill Momo.
Let's just go wild. Let's just kill Momo.
This is war, guys. This is the adult version of Avatar. Momo dies.
Exactly. So again, there's no way they're going to do the whole like Appa's lost days stuff. Maybe, but again, the budget would be so much for that. Appa's and that's lost why days they don't like have
the best episode.
They don't have them traveling at all on Appa because they just want to save money on the CGI monster, which sucks. Is good because he looks bad. Like he looks like a not a fun teddy bear type animal. Any other final thoughts? He's so crucial. I mean, that's the whole thing. Like Aang, he goes crazy, goes like very dark for a bit because you have fallen in love with Appa as well. And so you get where Aang's coming from. But in this one, again, Aang's going to be like so pissed. But with the way that they direct the kids in the show, he's going to be like mildly frowning as he's trying to murder people for Appa, who we don't care about because he's been in three scenes.
My thoughts are, if you're an adult and you went to watch the show because you wanted to see Avatar, but you don't like animated content, and you watch the show and you're disappointed, go watch the animated version, please. Just give it a shot.
Give it a chance.
Don't be a little bitch boy. Go watch the animated version.
Because there are some folks, again, and no matter what age you are, could be 65, could be 80, could be our age. People that don't like the animated stuff, just give it a shot.
Give it a shot, man. It's so good. Just
the animation is gorgeous and beautiful, but again,
if you get through the first story like up in the first like 60 episodes, you'll fall in love with it. I swear. Not that that's the whole show or anything, but if you watch it, you will enjoy it. I promise. Just go watch it. Stop being a whiny baby. Stop being a whiny baby who says animated stuff is for children. It is. Be a child. Go watch it.
Exactly, yeah. All right. So there we go. How many CGI Appas out of 5 are you giving this?
I'm giving it 1.5.
Dang. It's intense. Yeah, I'm giving it a 2. There's some parts where it's watchable, but yeah, overall, it's
pretty abysmal.
Massive, massive step down, which is very unfortunate.
Yeah.
So we'll see if they can course correct. Again, season 2 and 3 are the more stronger. Again, that's all great in the animated show, but season 1 is the weakest by comparison to the straight masterpieces of season 2 and 3. So they have better material to work with, I guess, in season 2, but a lot of that is because of the groundwork they laid for what happens in season 2 and season 1 of the animated show.
Yep.
So if they've already bungled it this much, we'll see if they'll be able to earn our investment in season 2 as they get to those big moments, but we shall see. Season 2 and 3 of the live action will be coming. We will cover them when they arrive.
Indeed.
And hopefully we'll have better things to say if they put out a better adaptation.
Absolutely. That's all the time we have. If you'd like to give your thoughts on the show, you can email us at theboxofficeshowpod@gmail.com.
Our main title theme for the show is Sundown by Joseph McDade.
If you like the show, please give us 5 stars whatever podcast app you're listening to, and be sure to tune in next week. Have a great rest of your day.